Facebook, Google, all of these companies are trying to figure out where are the rules and where are they going to draw the line.
There's clearly a demand for renters. They've got most of them full.
If you own a bond in your retirement portfolio, the price of that is going to go down.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Welcome to Thursday afternoon. Steve Bertrand here, high atop the Chicago River on 720 WGN. Are you a meat eater? Are you a vegetarian? Probably most of us are, like most of us, you are a flexitarian. Someone who likes to avoid meat when they can, but they don't want to pass a burger every day. Flexitarianism is a growing, and Tyson is trying to grow with it. We'll talk to Amy Guth about that a little bit later in the program. Also, logistics when it comes to getting your guacamole in from Mexico. But we'd like to start on Thursdays from a little bit north of Mexico, Northern California, at CNET. Ian Scher is on a phone line. He's a senior editor there. Ian, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Hi, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm excited. The scooters are coming. Here they come Saturday. The Chicago program begins on Saturday, and we're going to be up to our shins in scooters.
I wish you luck.
It's so funny, people debating it and talking about it. And, you know, obviously there are people who don't want them or are worried about them have pretty good reason. I mean, there have been evidence in other cities that it hasn't gone so well, but... You know, we're so wrapped up and knotted up in this sort of fear of what's coming. Maybe it's a generational thing. I don't know. But, I mean, to me, it's like this is what's next. Scooters are what's next. We might as well embrace them.
Well, I appreciate that you are on team hashtag scoot. But, one of the things I think is interesting is that we've written on CNET a couple of times now. The companies, while, you know, this may be the future of how a lot of us get around, the companies have been not doing much when it comes to safety and security.
We've talked about that.
Yeah, and CNET did this really in-depth investigation. We spoke to hospitals and emergency rooms across the country. We were the first to have any data on this. And what we found was that there was a real spike in head traumas and other injuries on these scooters. And you could say this is partially because, you know, people aren't being smart while they're driving them. That's absolutely true. But the other thing is that the companies themselves have had tried to fight helmet laws in various states to avoid those issues.
Is there anywhere where helmets are required?
So in California, it's unclear, which is why they fought the law. But, you know, one interpretation of the law could be that you need to wear a helmet, and Bird basically was able to fight that.
Okay. So anyway, so they're coming to Chicago, and Bird, so Bird is, how would you... If there's a bad guy company, is it Bird?
Well, it depends on which side of the street you're on. Yeah. You know, I think that Bird, one of the interesting things
but
is
Bird's,
that Bird
Bird's the company. Bird's the company that just sort of flies in, swoops in, drops their scooters, and then takes off, right?
Right, and they were the first electric scooter company to really hit the U.S. in a big way. And they actually, you know, the news of this week is that they bought this competitor called Scoot, which works with regulators, right? They try to be the nice guys. And as a result, for example, Bird is banned from San Francisco, but Scoot is allowed to work there.
So is it a little good scooter, bad scooter sort of mentality here?
Well, now it's one scooter. So right. We'll see whether or not Scoot becomes more like Bird or Bird becomes more like Scoot. So far, San Francisco's municipal organization, which, you know, they're the people who run all this stuff, they say they're not going to pull Bird's or Scoot's license to run in the city. They've been promised that Scoot will follow the rules still. So we might see a change, and that I think that would be welcomed.
But Bird is so much bigger than Scoot, right? It's hard to imagine that
they are.
Yeah. And I thought I read in the story by Derek Kerr at CNET.com that that Scoot was operating mopeds in San Francisco as well. Is that true?
Yeah. So there's actually a number of companies trying all sorts of different types of transportation. So there's mopeds, there's electric bicycles. I don't know if you knew, but Uber actually operates electric bicycles, too. So there's a bunch of these different things that they're testing out because they're trying to figure out what will people want to use, which ones make the most money, and which ones are going to be the most efficient. And so far, we're seeing a ton of ideas, which is really nifty.
Yeah, well, it is nifty. And so where do you think we're going to be, let's say 10 years from now? How is this all going to shake out? Every city
jetpacks.
Jetpacks, yeah. No, but really, will we have mopeds? Will every city have scooters? Will it be a phase that has gone away? I don't know.
I think it's a pretty good bet that we're going to have some sort of mass transportation. You know, the rentable bikes are super popular in San Francisco. I imagine they're pretty popular where you are.
They are, yes.
And this is just the next step, right? Like, part of it, you know, I've never ridden an electric bike because I'm just afraid of machines that make me go fast and I can't control them very well. But one of the things that a friend of mine who gets around San Francisco, he said an electric bike changed his life. So I think that a lot of people are going to get interested in this, especially as the cities fill up and become more dense and more people move to the suburbs. This is a natural next step.
Update me on the, there's a Wall Street Journal story about the FTC investigation of Facebook, right? And what Zuckerberg knew about privacy, when he knew about it. And it sounds like the story they were telling us publicly isn't the story that emails reflect. Or what's going on there?
Yeah, this was a fascinating story from the Wall Street Journal. So what they said is that they found that Zuckerberg reportedly did know about the company's questionable privacy practices. And the reason this is important is not just that Mark Zuckerberg went around all last year saying he did not know, but also that the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, is considering a fine against Facebook and possibly holding Zuckerberg himself liable, which could be a huge first step toward holding executives in these companies accountable for what the companies do. So it's a really interesting issue, and it could cause quite a stir if the FTC decides that this new evidence, which has just been found out and the Wall Street Journal reported on, may actually change the way that they approach regulating Facebook.
All right, so we've got that. I want to squeeze in one piece of hardware before we go. We're going to see soon, or we got a hint of what the Google Pixel 4 is going to look like. Should I be excited about that?
I mean, some people are definitely excited. Pixel is considered to be kind of the highest end of the Android devices. Anything that's not an iPhone, the Pixel and the Samsung are really the two that people really like. And this new Google Pixel 4, the big thing is that it has three cameras on the back, and this is a new trend. You know, we've all been living with two cameras or one camera. I think this year is going to be the year where we all get up to three. It's almost like the razor companies, right? They're all adding an extra razor.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting to see how this all shakes out, but we're not going to see it until the fall.
I'm not sure I need the fifth blade. Do I need the third camera?
Well, the thing that the companies will likely point out to you is that the third camera, in a lot of cases, is a super wide-angle camera. And a lot of professional photographers love the super wide-angle. It's great for scenes of outdoors and when you're in a bit, you know, when you're taking a photo of the street, it's really beautiful. So I have a feeling that a lot of people will like it. It'll be interesting to see how they try to sell it, though.
And are we going to be able to use this phone? This is going to sound weird with our fingers or our hands, but like with hand motions, is this the phone that you can direct with hand motions?
Yeah, this is an interesting thing. You know, Google's been working on technology to allow you to basically control the phone with your hand. And they are not the first to come up with this. There are a number of them who have kind of said, you know, if you wave your hand in front of the phone, it'll do stuff. But it's more of a gimmick than an actual useful thing. No one's really made it in a way that it's an aha revelation
right
to all of us.
I pretty much use my hand on my phone now. I don't know how you do it, Ian.
Well, you tap, right? The idea would be not tapping, which I think is a little ridiculous. Like, I'm used to tapping. Let's just stick with that.
Ian Schur, senior editor at CNET.com. Thanks for stopping by.
Of course. Take care.
Take a scooter. Come on over next week. We'll have a new adventure. It's 12:23. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. I could use some amazing spot cleaner on my portfolio, maybe my retirement fund, to clean up a couple of the dirty spots. Bill Geiger, welcome.
Good afternoon, sir.
Our conversations with Bill Geiger are sponsored by Geiger Wealth Management, Chicago Wealth Management Experts. Would a spot remover work? I don't think that would have much of an impact.
No, not really.
Nope.
Not really.
Okay, so we're here to talk about retirement, and you know we talk a lot about saving for it and everything. So you've saved up, you've looked at your numbers, you've figured out what I need.
Mm-hmm.
So then can people who've saved up and in the right spot when they retire, can they still run out of money?
Hey, let me tell you a story. I met with an HR director from a major Chicago corporation last week. He told me about an employee of theirs that retired in 2007, and he had a big loss in 2008. Between
right.
the loss and taking money out, they had to rehire him in 2009, and he's still working for them. He's 77 years old, and he's still working. He had done all the things he's supposed to do, except he didn't keep track of how much risk he had. He didn't diversify correctly.
I was going to say, so where do people get into most often run into trouble when it comes to planning for retirement?
They're really focused on growth. And in a market like this, that's easy.
It's only going up, Bill.
Yes, sir, until it goes down.
Right, right.
And let me tell you something. Markets go down twice as fast as they go up, maybe three times faster. And the problem is complacency. People just feel like, well, nothing bad's ever going to happen. If you're not diversified correctly and you have a big loss before retirement, you may not be able to retire.
How do you know if you're out of whack when it comes to your investment?
Well, you have a risk analysis done. You sit down with somebody who has the tools that can do that, run your portfolio through a risk analysis software, and just understand. I mean, we've got software that stress tests your portfolio. And by that, what I mean, you take your portfolio and put in it, and it goes back to 2008 and runs your portfolio that you own today through 2008. And if you see that that portfolio will go down 40%, you've got too much risk.
So you take the money you've got now, you put it through the 2008 shredding.
Yes.
Just to get a little fear in you to make your...
A little reality.
Yeah, that should say that, right.
A little reality is if your portfolio you're holding right now could go down 40%, most people have no idea they have that sort of risk.
You were just telling me off the air about a study about how long we're going to live without...
Bloomberg came out with a study just within the last couple of days that the average person is going to live... This is going to run out of money 10 years before they run out of life.
So they'll live 10 years beyond their retirement money.
That's right. They'll run out of money. The only thing they'll have left is Social Security, and they got to make it another 10, 12 years for women.
Okay, so if you're in your mid to late 50s, what do you do now to create that income or to see that you're going to be okay?
Late 50s, early 60s, you want to sit down. You want to have this risk analysis done. You want to diversify and start creating dependable income, because if you can get your income up, you can tolerate a little bit more risk in the growth side of your portfolio.
So if you've created with part of your money an income generating sort of fund,
right,
then you can be a little riskier with the rest of it.
Yeah, if you've got your income covered, Steve, between Social Security, if you have a pension, and an income strategy in your portfolio, if you've got your income covered, you can go through another 2008, and you're still going to be okay.
What percentage of people who come into you say to you that they've been meaning to do this for years? You know what I mean? My point is, I think a lot of people want to think they're okay. They're kind of afraid to find out that they're not. Maybe they are okay, but it's like not wanting to go to the doctor.
Steve, we get that comment more often when we get their plan put together. And they look at me or they look at each other and say, we should have done this 10 years ago.
Right.
That's most frequently where I hear that. Steve, I'd like to do something today that we haven't done for 3 months. And that is we're going to offer a complimentary full-blown retirement plan. It's a $3,000 value. We normally offer that to folks with a $500,000 and above portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
Today, we're going to offer it to portfolios of $250,000 or more. So if you're listening, you got a portfolio of $250,000 or more, same things we normally do, full-blown retirement plan, complimentary.
So if you're listening and you're like, well, what about this $500,000? Not, I don't have that. This is a chance to take advantage of it.
Yes, sir.
$250,000.
Down to $250,000.
Bill Geiger, thanks for coming by. Thanks very much, Eric Rung. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. You know, we talk about the trade war with China, the trade war with Mexico, the tariffs. Are they on or are they off? And we talk about, you know, what we're going to buy at Walmart or what we might buy at the grocery store and how they're impacted. But the fact is, too, there are trucking companies that have got to bring those to and from the border, and they've been dealing with this as well, with the threats probably more than the rest of us. Bryce Williford is here. He's the Director of Commercial Sales at Blue Grace Logistics. Bryce, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me.
All right, tell me what you guys do just so to set the table that way.
We provide transportation services for companies, so help them get their goods from point A to point B, get goods in from Mexico to the Walmarts or the Targets of the world or the raw materials down to Mexico to be produced.
Okay, so how's business amid this tariff talk?
So business is good for us. Typically, when change is going on, we are in a good place. But a lot of uncertainty right now in the market with pending tariffs starting, then stopping, and what that would look like in the long run.
So one of the, I've had a few conversations about with you guys and about trucking, and you need some sort of reliability when it comes to, because it's kind of sometimes hard to find truck drivers, right?
Absolutely. There's definitely a labor shortage right now in the industry. Finding qualified truck drivers is challenging.
So when the president threatened these tariffs in Mexico, could you feel it in your orders?
So we definitely saw a push from customers reaching out, asking for capacity for trucks coming in from Mexico, from the border towns, Laredo, Brownsville, et cetera. We also got a lot of questions from customers about what's going to happen if these tariffs are enacted 6 months, a year down the road.
Right.
And how should we plan our supply chains looking forward?
And do you have answers for them? What do they do?
So we always advise customers to look at risk management and change management and what do you do if something happens in the future. So a lot of our advice is around being nimble with their supply chains and understanding where your threats are within your supply chain.
The president would say that people under threat of terror, these companies might bring more of their supply chain back north of the border. Have you seen any of that happening?
So supply chains don't move very quickly. A lot of companies recently or in the last 10 years have been participating in nearshoring, which was bringing manufacturing from Asia, from overseas back to Mexico.
Back to Mexico. Mm-hmm. Okay.
From due to the amount of transit time it takes to get product from overseas here. Cost of labor has gone up in Asia from where it was in the 80s and 90s. But moving a supply chain is challenging, and could it push manufacturing back to the U.S.? Sure, but that wouldn't happen overnight. If you're, the automotive industry imported over $100 billion worth of finished goods from and parts from Mexico last year. That doesn't change.
And so we speak, or I do anyway, sort of glibly about, we're talking about avocados.
Yeah.
And there certainly is produce that comes north, right? But when it comes to steel or pieces of machinery, I think a lot of us don't realize, I'm only beginning to realize, that one widget could cross the border three or four times.
Sure, absolutely.
Explain for me how that works.
So you have parts or components of goods that are brought into the U.S. or are made in the U.S., are sent to Mexico to be put together or assembled into other products, value add in Mexico, and then brought back to the U.S. To be sold to consumers.
And so when you talk about the companies and their need to be nimble, what does that mean? Does that mean that they just... I explain for you what nimble means.
Sure. So if anything can go wrong, it will go wrong in the supply chain world. There's always something happening, whether it's tariffs or labor shortages or infrastructure issues, weather events or seasonality. That happens very frequently. Companies need to be able to respond and adapt to that so that they aren't left stranded when they need parts or goods.
Can we gauge the economy by your business?
So transportation tends to precede the economy. So when you see orders pick up, when you see transportation pick up, it tends to lead to show that the economy is getting better.
Okay, then let us in on the secret. What's happening?
Say that again. I'm sorry.
I said, so let us in on the secret.
Yeah.
What's coming next?
It's a confusing time in the market. I wish I had a good crystal ball for you. We're bullish on what's happening right now in the transportation world. This is typically the time of year when it gets busier. We're also very actively growing. It's a very fragmented market. So even the largest players out there are no more than 6 to 7% of the market. So there's a lot of opportunity right now in the business.
There's also a lot of change. I mean, we talk about the shortage in truck drivers. I don't know if people aren't going to trucking school because they think there aren't going to be truckers one day. Where are we with driverless trucks?
So from everything I've seen, we're still pretty far away. The technology has improved a lot, but from a regulatory standpoint, there are a lot of hurdles that would need to be...
Is that what's going to slow us down, the regulation? Because aren't they...
Yeah.
Didn't I read they're doing a mail run from Arizona to Texas?
There's some driverless testing being done in Arizona. I believe there's some being done in Colorado as well. I think that there's also opportunity for... drone type technology, I'm using that loosely, where you have humans in the trucks for the first mile, final mile within populated areas, and then more automated on the road. But we're not close to that happening right now.
And when you say not close, you mean 5 years, a decade, 2 years?
If you had to pin me to a number, I'd say longer
than
that.
I'm going
to
pin you, Bryce. I'm going to pin you.
I would say longer than that.
Longer than that before it happens.
Yep.
How about then with just driverless cars? And then I think driverless cars are going to come after the trucks.
I would say it's probably reversed.
Oh, really? Okay.
From a safety standpoint, you have basically an 80,000-pound missile moving at 70 miles
point,
an hour
yeah.
versus a single car.
I was thinking more of the traffic and the streets and stuff, but yeah, I guess that's a good point. They would be more dangerous.
Yeah.
All right. So right now the tariffs are off.
Mm-hmm.
The president says they might be back on. Yep. He also refers to a secret plan.
Yeah.
So if I were to call you from Monterey today, what do you tell me to do?
I would tell you to continue to evaluate your supply chain around a couple of things. Where are the risks? Where are your pain points? And where are the places that you could be in danger if this does go into effect down the road? The tariffs are not the only thing that could hurt your supply chain coming in from Mexico or Canada or anywhere else. You need to be prepared for alternate sources of manufacturing and transportation.
Bryce Williford, the Director of Commercial Sales, Blue Grace Logistics. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me.
You bet. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Workplace issues are always tough to resolve. Michael's gossiping about Judy, Steve stole my pen, Joni and Chachi are hooking up in the supply closet. However, those seem pretty minor compared to what the nurses at the University of Chicago are working through with their medical center. The nurses' union is alleging that the hospital isn't doing all it could to best document incidents of patients attacking nurses. Yeah, I'll take Joni and Chachi all day. The union is working with the leadership there to try and resolve the issue, and this is probably one they won't want to cut any corners on. And in manufacturing, you probably don't want to cut any corners either, because it all starts with the right materials. But how do you know which ones are the right ones? Enter MHUB. MHUB's holding a class on Friday, June 14th, to discuss the right ways to find materials, going about the process, and everything in between. It's a tough industry to be in right now, but there are ways around it. You got to talk through it with industry colleagues. Register at mhubchicago.com. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
That was Orion Samuelson, accompanied by I don't know what there briefly. Sorry about that, Orion. There was just someone or something else there sort of bleeded in. All right, you're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank, and we thank them for that. Amy Guth is in the studio, and, well, I'm a flexitarian, I guess. Are you a flexitarian?
I don't know. I don't put a lot of labels on anything I eat, but I think, you know, we're having more conversations about the need to consume less meat for environmental reasons. So I think that's on a lot of people's minds.
Maybe I'm trying to consume more vegetables. Does that work?
Absolutely.
Or are these vegetables and these faux meat products so sort of convoluted that I'm not getting the benefit of vegetables?
Well, I think that's a big issue to be considered. I know a lot of people with a lot of food allergies have concerns about meat alternative and things like that because of other additives in them, soy, wheat, gluten, things like that. But Tyson really wants in on that meat-free game. And so after seeing Beyond Meat's IPO being wildly successful, so they have announced what they're going to do. And one of the things they're going to do is speak directly to flexitarians, because I think a lot of the meat alternative folks are saying, hey, we want this in the meat case right alongside. We just wanted an alternative. We don't want it sectioned off in a special part of the store.
A flexitarian is someone who is trying to cut, is eating.
Yeah.
Well, what we're talking about basically are plant-based meats or plant supplemented meats.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's flexitarianism is where people are trying to, who do eat meat, but are trying to cut back, trying to eat more vegetables.
And I mean, significant, I like, because Tyson produces a lot of meat.
I mean,
was it 8%? I thought I saw somewhere.
Yes. So, a lot. That's a big share in the American meat market.
It's a huge meat company, but they also realize this is an emerging market, so they're starting to move into it.
And so one of the things that they're going to be producing is a half pea protein, half Angus beef burger. So it's not one or the other. It's like, hey, you know what? You can still have this, but it's going to be less meat.
Why? I don't know that you know this, but why would I want to eat that?
I have no idea.
We
should have a taste test, because I don't know what that would taste like.
Yeah, but so, I mean, just wondering, okay, what's the benefit for it? Because if I don't want to eat meat, there's meat there. If I want to eat meat, there's vegetable there. I mean, I don't know if it's a caloric thing.
I think it's about, hey, if the people that are like, I don't want to have this pea protein thing, or I don't like the taste of the veggie burger or whatever. I do still eat meat, but I do want to try to eat more plants. Here, this way, to buy a pound of it wouldn't be a pound of meat. It would be really a half pound of meat and a half pound of this pea protein substitute.
Right.
So it's a way to sneak flexitarianism into your life.
Okay, they're behind, right? Chicken sausages, things like that are going to...
Yeah, they're also going to have a product that is chicken, half chicken and half plant protein there,
yeah,
that's coming out for and sausages, things like that. So now what's interesting to note about Tyson that I always have to underscore when we talk about them getting into this game is that they were They had 6.5% of Beyond Meat until about a week before Beyond Meat's IPO.
That's bad timing, Amy.
That is what we like to call bad timing.
Right.
So
Beyond Meat, now they've suffered a little bit, but when
they have, but
when their IPO took off, they increased five.
I think right now it's at about a little over five times
they opened at. Yeah.
And so about a week before, Tyson said, "You know, we're going to go and we're going to do our own thing. And thanks so much. We're going to go." And they left and announced that they'd be creating their own meat alternative product. And so I think on some level, they're probably kicking themselves. On the other, they're probably like, hey, we're a huge company. These are little guys. We can go do our own thing and come out victorious. We already have all this infrastructure. So we shall see.
This is coming up on the Daily Gist today?
That's right.
What else you got for me?
Well, it is Thursday. So I had a conversation with Dennis Rodkin about all the real estate headlines for the week, including there's a new development planned right there at the corner of Randolph and Ogden, where Urban Belly and Belly Q set, that one-story building. There's a proposal to turn that into a 21-story residential. Yeah, I mean, it's really a bigger conversation about the changing face of Fulton Market in the West Loop. So, yeah.
We'll check it out. The Daily Gist, it drops, what, about 1 o'clock in the afternoon?
Well, it's 1 now, so no, we got a little more to do.
She's going to go drop it in just a few
minutes.
You know,
if you subscribe to Crane's afternoon update emails, it's almost always included in that, and you get kind of the top headlines that have broken during the day.
Sweet. All right, Amy Guth, thanks for coming by.
Thanks so much.